All right, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, Human Anatomy, and we're going to start autonomic nervous system today. But before we get started, what we're going to do is just talk about open labs. Got open lab, not this week. We were thinking of holding one Friday, but there was an instructor that asked to see if anybody would come on Friday, and we didn't have a lot of interest. So what we're going to, so what we're going to do is hold an open lab Tuesday, or I will, from 4 till 7 p.m. That's Tuesday in anatomy lab, because some of you might have some practicums coming up even as early as Wednesday. There might even be one on Tuesday night, I'm not sure. But anyway, and then we have an instructor that will hold one on Friday from 10 till 12 as well. So a couple of them next week. All right, so share that information with anybody that might need to go to those open labs, whether they're in anatomy or physiology class or an A&P class or whatever, just let them know. Okay, so do you have any questions? What did we talk about last time? Peripheral nervous system. Okay, so you should know like the difference between cranial nerves and spinal nerves. How many cranial nerves are there?
12.
Yeah, you got 12 pairs. And you should know the names, the numbers, and some function of the cranial nerves. And you should also know if they're sensory, motor, or if they're mixed. And I gave you a couple mnemonics that you can use so you don't have to just brute memorize those, right? So you can use a little trick to help your memorization skills. All right. So remember that very first slide that I showed you on the nervous system, and that very first slide was sort of like this, right? But it was more like a flow diagram. If we're going to think of different divisions of the peripheral nervous system, how could you break the peripheral nervous system down? Sensory and motor, that's a really good way of doing that. All right, that's by the direction of signals. Right, afferent or efferent, same way of talking about that. What's another way that you can break down the peripheral nervous system? It's somatic versus autonomic, right? So in your mind, you should know what the effector organs are for a somatic nervous system, which is what? For somatic motor nervous system, where do all those nerves go to? Skeletal muscle, because somatic means what? Voluntary. Right? As opposed to autonomic, what are the effector organs for the autonomic nervous system? Cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and glands. These are things you don't have direct control of. Your body takes care of these things automatically. Okay, so please refer to that diagram. Make sure you can block those different parts of the nervous system down together. So this is a nice slide that compares a somatic pathway and an autonomic pathway. So let's start with one that you're familiar with. So here's something going to skeletal muscle. So what kind of neuron goes to a skeletal muscle? You could say, well, that's a motor neuron, all right, or an alpha motor neuron. But since I'm going to contrast this with the autonomic nervous system, what might you want to call it? That's a somatic neuron, somatic motor neuron, because it's going to the skeletal muscle. And here you can see the cell body in the ventral horn of the gray matter of the spinal cord, and then the axon leaves the ventral root, right? Because the ventral root is what? 100% motor. And then it's going to form the spinal nerve, and it's going to course all the way to the effector muscle. Okay, you guys, stop whispering. I don't want you to disrupt anybody that's sitting around there. Okay? And so what can you tell me about this axon right here? What can you tell me about the speed of conduction or the type of conduction? It's fast, right? Because why? It's myelinated. So what do we call that conduction? It's called saltatory conduction, because it's a myelinated fiber. And how many nerves does it take to get from the spinal cord or central nervous system all the way to the effector organ for a somatic motor pathway? It's just one. Yeah, you see it right there. You're right. So I would like for you to say that with more conviction. Okay? So don't say one, say
one.
Yeah, okay. Because, yeah, and the other thing is it just doesn't get any simpler than that, right? Just one. Okay. All right, now for an autonomic pathway, where do we have the nerve cell bodies? It's not in the ventral horn, it's in the? Okay, which one is that? Here is ventral horn, here is dorsal horn, and that's not either. This is the
lateral
horn, right? So for this autonomic pathway leaving the spinal cord, it leaves the lateral horn. Of course, since it's motor, it leaves the ventral root, and it leaves the central nervous system, but does it go all the way to an effector organ like cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, or glands? No, it stops and there's a synapse. So it actually takes how many neurons for a signal to get from CNS to effector organ? It takes two. All right. That's really important. That's true for all autonomic pathways except for one that we'll make a special example of, right? There's always an exception, and it's a really important exception, so we'll talk about that. All right, now let's look at these. So where you have a group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system, actually let me go back a little bit. A group of nerve cell bodies in right here, what do we call this thing? A ganglion. That's the dorsal root ganglion. So what do we call a group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system? You just told me. It's a ganglion. Yeah, it's a ganglion. Right, so here's a group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system. This is what? That's another ganglion, right? But it's a different one. It's not a dorsal root. This one right here, we'll give them a couple of different names, but this is just an autonomic ganglion, some other place in the body. And this contains then a synapse between what we call the preganglionic cell and the postganglionic cell. So it requires two nerves. The first one, the proximal nerve, is the preganglionic. The distal nerve is the postganglionic cell. And where it synapses is right inside this ganglion right here. And then the postganglionic cell carries that information to the effector organ. Now, there's something else that you could probably see on this slide. Look at the axons of the preganglionic fiber and postganglionic fiber. Do you see any difference between them? Yeah, namely, one is myelinated and the other is not. Which one is myelinated? The preganglionic neuron is always myelinated in an autonomic pathway. The postganglionic neuron is always non-myelinated. Okay, that's always the way it's going to be. So, if we look at this nerve right here, what color is it going to look like with your naked eye? It's going to look white, and the postganglionic fiber is going to look gray. That's right. All right, so we're going to name some other things in a little bit. All right, so this is a general architecture that you should not forget. Okay, so make sure probably you can even draw those things out. All right, so don't forget, the autonomic nervous system controls involuntary or self-governing aspects of your body, including what? Blood pressure, heart rate, digestion, respiration, urination, sweating, pupil dilation. And I would run out of breath before I could enumerate all of them because it's what? Everything except skeletal muscles, right? So the autonomic nervous system is very busy doing all this stuff. Okay. All right, so I think I've talked about pretty much all this, comparative neuroanatomy of somatic versus voluntary autonomic nervous system, but let's read this question right here. What is the effector in the somatic voluntary pathway? What's the effector? I tell you what is an effector? What does an effector do for us? Oh, that's a nerve is going to bring information someplace. But an effector, let's work on some examples of what effectors are. What does an effector do, and then maybe some examples of what they are. Okay, remember a reflex loop? A reflex loop always starts with a stimulus, and it always ends in a response, and the thing that produces a response is an effector. All right, like a response to move your body away from some kind of harmful stimulus, right? You require an effector to do that, a muscle, a skeletal muscle. So that skeletal muscle is producing that response. All right, so what is the effector in a somatic voluntary pathway? It's something that produces a response, and for a somatic pathway, it's got to be a skeletal muscle, because somatic means voluntary. All right, somatic means more on the surface of your body as opposed to muscle that's deep. Deep muscle is smooth muscle that's controlling your digestive system or reproductive system, for instance, or urinary system. All right, somatic voluntary pathway just is a single, it's not bipolar. All right, is what? It's a multipolar neuron. All right, and for the autonomic pathway, you have two motor neurons, and they're both multipolar. And where is the cell body of the preganglionic fiber located? The cell body for the preganglionic fiber in an autonomic pathway. Should I flash this slide back up here for you? Where is it? It's in that lateral horn. Yeah, it's in the lateral horn of the gray matter of the spinal cord. Okay. All right. Let's see this question. What are the effectors of the autonomic or visceral motor pathways? What are things that can produce responses? Glands, they can secrete something. Smooth muscle, it can contract something. Or cardiac muscle, which can pump blood. Those are the effectors for an autonomic system. Okay. Control system architecture. All right, a tonic control system is one that describes a system with a single effector that can be adjusted on or off or maybe up and down. All right, so maybe a tonic system right here, just think of this water faucet, instead of having two little knobs on it right here, maybe it only has one. So I can turn the water on or off. All right, or I could get it to come out fast or slow, but could I adjust the temperature of the water? No, so it would be completely ineffective to adjust the temperature of the water. So if you wanted to adjust the temperature of the water out of here, what do you need? Yeah, you need another knob because you need to mix hot and cold together to get the precise temperature that you want, right? So those two knobs are what in terms of temperature? They are antagonistic to each other. So the autonomic nervous system, in order to get precise control and balance, is based on antagonism. And we've talked about this in terms of the musculoskeletal system already. All right, so in terms of a tonic control system, let's just say if you were in your car and the way that you get your car to move is with the gas pedal, that would be the only way that you could get your car to move around. You'd have no brake pedal. So you'd have to be really, really careful driving your car if you only had an accelerator. Might you be able to drive a little ways with just an accelerator? Yeah, maybe. But chances are what? You're going to crash into something. So in order to have precise control and balance of your car, you don't only need an accelerator, you need a brake pedal, and you mix those two activities together so you have precise control and balance of your car. So that's how your body operates. We call that an antagonistic system. All right, so do you think it would be a good idea to have tonic or antagonistic control over important body functions, such as heart rate? Antagonistic control, right, because your heart rate is controlling so many other things in your body, like blood pressure. If you could only speed your heart rate up, maybe your heart rate would go so fast, your blood pressure would go up so quickly that a blood vessel would pop, right? And that would be a terrible thing. Okay. So the two antagonistic divisions of the autonomic nervous system are the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. All right, and here's one thing that will be almost always true. These divisions are antagonistic to each other. So if for some particular system we're interested in, for instance, like heart rate, if one is inhibitory, which I signify by this down arrow right here, what does that mean the activity of the other part of the autonomic nervous system is? Okay, it's going to be antagonistic to it, right? They're almost always antagonistic to each other. Only a couple examples where we can show that that is not the case, right? But you can't always say that the parasympathetic nervous system is inhibitory. For instance, here we see it is inhibitory on heart rate, but is it inhibitory on digestion? No, it is stimulatory to digestion. So you can't always say parasympathetic is inhibitory. The only thing you can say for sure that if you know that the parasympathetic is inhibitory on a system, the sympathetic is going to be excitatory. All right, opposite. Okay, let's look at another slide. So we got these two divisions of the autonomic nervous system. I'm going to come back to that one. And this one right here represents the sympathetic part of the autonomic nervous system. And again, here you can see the nerve cell bodies of the multipolar neuron in the lateral horn. The gray matter is spinal cord. Of course, it's going to leave the ventral root, and it's going. And this is a myelinated fiber. It's going to go to the autonomic ganglion, where it synapses on the postganglionic fiber. The neurotransmitter that is used in this autonomic ganglion is acetylcholine. And where have you run into acetylcholine before? In the central nervous, like where in the central nervous system? Oh, you know what? I think I heard the answer I was really thinking of myself, and I'll have to think about central nervous system. I don't have a good example in the central nervous system, but the classical example would be at the neuromuscular junction, where a somatic motor neuron releases acetylcholine, and that stimulates a muscle into contraction, a skeletal muscle into contraction. All right, so that same neurotransmitter is used between the preganglionic and postganglionic fiber at autonomic ganglia. And you know what? That's going to be true for all autonomic ganglia, both parasympathetic and sympathetic ganglia. All right, then the postganglionic fiber in which kind of pathway? We're talking about sympathetic pathway. All right, it's going to go to an effector organ. Now, the neurotransmitter that's released by the postganglionic fiber is not acetylcholine. It is norepinephrine. And that's related to a compound that you're kind of familiar with already. It's related to epinephrine. And epinephrine has a layman's name as well, kind of a layman's term for epinephrine. It's called adrenaline. Have you ever heard of adrenaline before? Yeah. And what does adrenaline do in terms of your heart rate, for instance? It speeds your heart rate up, right? If forever, for whatever reason, you're driving down the freeway and all of a sudden it looks like an accident is happening right in front of you and you're going to get crushed between a big dump truck and a semi-tractor trailer and for sure you're going to die, right? And somehow you live through it, right? You just drove through it. What's happening to your heart rate? Oh, it speeds up, right? It's your heart is even just pounding right outside your chest. That's due to epinephrine, and a related compound is norepinephrine. Okay, so norepinephrine is a neurotransmitter released by the postganglionic sympathetic fiber. What is a neurotransmitter that's released by the preganglionic sympathetic fiber? Yeah, do you see acetylcholine right there? So here's the preganglionic fiber. And then here is acetylcholine. Okay. All right, so how do you know this is an autonomic pathway? Because let's just pretend you don't see sympathetic pathway. How do you know that's an autonomic pathway and not a somatic pathway?
Myelination.
Myelination? Did you say, or no myelination?
No. One has myelination and the other one doesn't.
You know what? All parts of the somatic pathway have myelinated fibers, and some parts of the autonomic pathway have myelinated fibers. So I don't know if I like that so much. There's another easy way to tell. Yeah. Well, close, but one pathway has one neuron, and another pathway has two neurons. Which pathway has one neuron? Right here, somatic motor pathway, going to voluntary muscle. How many neurons do you see there?
One.
Just one? For an autonomic pathway, how many neurons do you see before it gets to the effector organ?
Two.
Okay, so one has one and the other has two. Right, that's all there is to it. So you could answer my question right here, is this a somatic or an autonomic pathway? Because you'd say autonomic because it has two neurons in that pathway from the central nervous system to the effector organ. Okay? Just two neurons. And what do you call this junction between these two neurons right here?
Synapse.
That's a synapse. And how is information carried across the synapse between two neurons? As what kind of signal? Yeah, a chemical signal. And a general name for that chemical signal is, okay, is, for instance, a neurotransmitter. And then what's the specific name of a neurotransmitter? Acetylcholine is one, and now you know another one. What's another one called? Norepinephrine, right? So the preganglionic fiber releases acetylcholine, the postganglionic fiber releases norepinephrine. Okay, that is for what kind of pathway? Sympathetic, and sympathetic is an autonomic pathway. All right. So what other part of the autonomic nervous system do we have to look at? The parasympathetic, right? Because there's two divisions to maintain nice antagonistic control. So here is an illustration of a parasympathetic pathway. And how could you tell this is not a somatic pathway, but an autonomic pathway? Because it has two neurons, right? It has two neurons. And it has a ganglion in between. So here is the preganglionic neuron. Notice the cell body's in the lateral horn or the gray matter of the spinal cord, leaves a ventral root, goes to an autonomic ganglion, and the information is carried across the synapse between the preganglionic fiber and postganglionic fiber via the signaling molecule. This is what we call a neurotransmitter. But specifically, what neurotransmitter is that? That is acetylcholine, right, which then causes the signal to redevelop in the postganglionic fiber, and then that goes to the effector organ. But now, what is the neurotransmitter on the postganglionic fiber? Acetylcholine. What was it for the sympathetic postganglionic fiber? It was norepinephrine, right? So we have different neurotransmitters that are used by the two divisions of the autonomic nervous system. Okay, so sympathetic is norepinephrine, parasympathetic is acetylcholine, but the similarity is what? The neurotransmitter within the ganglion is acetylcholine for both parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. Okay, and the other thing that's similar between the sympathetic nervous system, the preganglionic fiber is myelinated, the postganglionic fiber is non-myelinated. So the preganglionic looks white, the postganglionic looks gray as a result of that. All right, so that's kind of a nice comparison between the two nervous systems. Okay. All right, let me read this question right here. Are the pre- and postganglionic fibers of the parasympathetic nervous system cholinergic or adrenergic? You know what? I didn't tell you what adrenergic means. Maybe I didn't even tell you what cholinergic means. All right, maybe I did. But anyway, when a neuron releases acetylcholine, we call it a cholinergic neuron when it releases that neurotransmitter. So here we see a parasympathetic pathway. The preganglionic fiber is cholinergic because it releases acetylcholine. What about the postganglionic fiber? It is also a cholinergic neuron because it's releasing what? Acetylcholine. All right, let's go back to the sympathetic pathway. What about this preganglionic fiber? What type is it? It is a cholinergic because it releases acetylcholine, but the postganglionic fiber doesn't release acetylcholine. It releases norepinephrine, so we can't call that a cholinergic neuron. This postganglionic fiber we call an adrenergic neuron because it releases norepinephrine. Okay, and as a matter of fact, in order for this postganglionic cell to be sensitive to acetylcholine, what does it have to have on these dendrites and cell body right here? In order to be sensitive to acetylcholine, what does it have to have? How can this neuron respond to acetylcholine being released by the preganglionic fiber? It's got to have a receptor. It's got to have a receptor that binds acetylcholine, which then initiates that electrical signal once again. So even those receptors right here are what we call cholinergic receptors. So the target tissues down over here that respond to the postganglionic fiber, they're going to respond to norepinephrine. So how would you talk about those receptors on the effector organ, like smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands. Since they're going to respond to norepinephrine, we can't say that they're cholinergic receptors. We would say they are adrenergic receptors because they're sensitive to norepinephrine. Okay. So what about this question right here? Are the pre- and post-ganglionic fibers of the parasympathetic nervous system cholinergic and adrenergic? Okay, because remember, for the parasympathetic nervous system, what are they? They're the same. That's sympathetic. Here's parasympathetic. It's what? Acetylcholine? Acetylcholine? So they're what? They're cholinergic. Yeah, we just talk about them as being cholinergic. What about for, do I have the next question? That's logical in my mind. How do you describe, this is under parasympathetic nervous system. All right, let's scoop down maybe to here. No, I'm going to have to ask that question. How would you describe the nervous, the preganglionic fibers of the sympathetic nervous system? Let's go back. The preganglionic fibers of the sympathetic nervous system, these are cholinergic. What about the postganglionic fiber? Those are adrenergic. So that's how you use that terminology to talk about these two different neurons. Okay, so how would you describe the difference between the pre- and postganglionic neurons of the parasympathetic nervous system? That's a good thing to consider. So there is some difference even within, what, the parasympathetic nervous system. Let's go back and look. Here's sympathetic. Here's parasympathetic. What's one way that you could tell me what the difference is? Because they're both, what? They're both cholinergic, but is there a difference? Do you see any difference right there? One's myelinated and one's not. Which one's myelinated? The preganglionic one. And then one is long and one is short. Which one is long? The preganglionic is very long and the postganglionic is microscopically short. This ganglion right here, the autonomic ganglion, usually exists right on the effector organ. So if this parasympathetic fiber is going to the heart, the preganglionic fiber goes all the way to the heart where it synapses on a ganglion right on the surface of the heart, and then the postganglionic fiber just goes to the heart, which is where? Right next door, just right there. So the postganglionic fiber is very short. So let's do that same comparison with the sympathetic nervous system. Okay, so what's the difference between the preganglionic and postganglionic fiber for the sympathetic pathway? Are they both adrenergic? Are they both cholinergic? No. Which one is the cholinergic one? Okay, you could say presynaptic, and I think everybody would understand what you mean, but when we talk about autonomic nervous system, because there's a ganglion, we change our terminology just a little bit, and we say preganglionic and postganglionic. And so sometimes when you're in a hurry, then that kind of erases all confusion right away. So it's good to say pre- and postganglionic fiber. All right, so which one is cholinergic? It is the preganglionic fiber. And what about the postganglionic fiber? It is adrenergic, so that's a difference between these two neurons. What else? The pre is, look at that. Oh, yeah, the pre is really short. The preganglionic fiber is short, and the postganglionic fiber in this case is relatively long. So these autonomic ganglia are far away from the target organs. So if this pathway was going to the heart, this ganglion here would be very close to the spinal cord. And then the postganglionic fiber travels a long way. All right, there's another difference too. And this is a similarity with the parasympathetic nervous system. What's the difference between the pre- and postganglionic fiber? We said, the pre is myelinated and the post is non-myelinated, just like for the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, the only other difference that I really see and I could point out to you here is that look at the branching pattern for this sympathetic pathway. You see a lot of branches on these motor neurons? Yeah, it's highly branched. What about for parasympathetic nervous system? Not very branched. As a matter of fact, I don't see any branches. All right, so that's a characteristic of the sympathetic nervous system. When it gets activated, it has a tendency to activate everything in your body at one time. The parasympathetic nervous system has more targeted applications. It can target one effector organ without stimulating other effector organs in your body. But the sympathetic, once it becomes activated, where does that sympathetic signal go? Almost everywhere in your body. And we're going to see another example of how that's accomplished. It's accomplished with a neural hormone that's released. Okay? All right. So that's kind of a little synopsis of the difference in architecture of the autonomic nervous system. Let's see if this door is it's not open. Well, too late. Too late to get in. Okay. So let's look at some of the characteristics of the parasympathetic nervous system. The cell bodies in the CNS brainstem or spinal cord, gray matter, right, at levels S2, 3, and 4. What does S2, 3, and 4 mean? Is that cervical? Thoracic?
Sacral.
Yeah, where's the sacrum at? Way down in like no man's land, right? That's end of the vertebral column. That's really far away from your brain, right? Okay, so, but that's very important because that's how these parasympathetic tracts leave the central nervous system. And the other way is through the brainstem. What kind of nerves leave the brainstem? Remember, there's two kinds of nerves that can leave the central nervous system. What are the two kinds? Cranial nerves and spinal nerves. So the brainstem is part of what? The spinal cord or brain? It's part of the brain, so nerves that leave the brainstem are?
Cranial
nerves. And what's... If you're going to know one nerve, I would know this one cranial nerve, all right, that carries this parasympathetic signal out of the brainstem. So you think it has a cranial nerve number one? Where's cranial nerve number one? That's way up by your frontal lobe. That's not brainstem. How do you name the cranial nerves from anterior to posterior? Yeah, you go 1, 2, 3, as you get more and more posterior, the cranial nerve numbers get bigger and bigger and bigger. So the brain stem is way posterior, so it's got to have a big number. Maybe not the biggest number, but the most important parasympathetic nerve, cranial nerve, is nerve number X. What's X?
10.
Yeah, which is vagus nerve. Yeah, so the vagus nerve carries a lot of parasympathetic outflow from the central nervous system to the periphery. And since parasympathetic outflow leaves via cranial nerves and sacral nerves, we say that it has craniosacral outflow. So parasympathetic signals can't leave the cervical spine, can't leave the thoracic spine, can't leave the lumbar spine because there are no nerves that leave from that region. Only from what? Cranial nerves and sacral nerves, cranial-sacral. So it's a little strange that way. All right. The other thing is, what? Ganglia are on or near the target organ. So the preganglionic fibers are long, the postganglionic fibers are short. Here are some important target tissues for the parasympathetic nervous system. And these are the only ones that I really want you to know. All right. If I ask you some effects of the parasympathetic nervous system. All right, it decreases heart rate. So as parasympathetic activity increases, what happens to heart rate? It goes the opposite way. It goes down. And that activity is going to occur via the vagus nerve or cranial nerve number 10. All right, now look at digestion. What is the result of increased parasympathetic activity on the digestive system? It increases. Right, so the parasympathetic nervous system is excitatory to digestion, right, which is what? The opposite compared to your heart rate. What about respiration, which means, I mean, breathing, your rate of breathing? It decreases respiration, it decreases your rate of breathing, and then it also causes pupil constriction, meaning your pupils get smaller. When do your pupils get smaller? In bright light. To protect your retina, for instance. So that's a parasympathetic nervous system that's responsible for that. And then, again, don't forget, both the preganglionic and postganglionic fibers are what? Cholinergic. That's how we would talk about that. All right. Let's contrast that with the sympathetic. Oh, no, I want to show you a picture. Okay, so here is a diagram of an autonomic pathway system, and you should be able to tell me if this is parasympathetic or sympathetic outflow. Because where do you see these nerves leaving the central nervous system? From cranial nerves or sacral nerves? That's the only two places where this outflow can take place. And what did we just see? What division of the autonomic nervous system leaves from cranial nerves and sacral nerves? That was the parasympathetic division. All right, so here you can see cranial nerves leaving. And then here's a ganglion where it's going to synapse, and then here's the postganglionic fiber. So this dotted line right here, what does that dotted line mean to you? It means a nerve, but what kind of nerve? It is a non-myelinated fiber. Remember, the the preganglionics are myelinated, the post are non-myelinated. But don't also forget that these are both what? Cholinergic neurons right here. Okay. So immediately that what you should recognize on this figure that this is a parasympathetic outflow because it's what? Craniosacral. And another way that you could tell that this is parasympathetic because look at this preganglionic fiber. It's what? Long. Goes all the way to the urinary bladder. And then what about the postganglionic fiber? It's dinky, right? It's really short. Okay. As a matter of fact, it's so short you probably can't even tell if it's a dashed line. But all the postganglionic fibers are dashed because they're non-myelinated. Maybe in your textbook you can see it. Maybe you can see it on the slide. I can't see it on the slide, but it's there. Okay. So do you see skeletal muscle anywhere here?
No.
Because why? Because that's voluntary. That belongs to the somatic nervous system. And here we're looking at autonomic nervous system. Right. Okay. All right. So let's now turn our attention to the sympathetic nervous system. The cell bodies are in the spinal cord gray matter from T1 to L2. What does that mean? Thoracic 1 all the way down to L2. This is where sympathetic outflow takes place. And since it's from T1 to L2, sometimes we call that thoracolumbar outflow. So this division of the autonomic nervous system leaves from a totally different place compared to the sympathetic outflow. Okay, so the ganglia is far away from the target organ, which means it's close to the spinal cord. There's something called the sympathetic chain ganglia, all right, which are like little auxiliary spinal cords on either side of the vertebral column that are there specifically to carry sympathetic signals, the sympathetic chain ganglia. And since they're ganglia, what do they contain? A bunch of cell bodies. That's where the postganglionic fibers originate, some of them, in the sympathetic chain ganglia. All right, so what are the effects of sympathetic stimulation? It's going to be opposite to or antagonistic to parasympathetic stimulation, right? So sympathetic activity increases heart rate, and sympathetic activity does what to digestion? Decreases digestion, but it does increase respiration, and it increases pupil dilation. So these are opposite effects compared to parasympathetic stimulation. It's antagonistic to parasympathetic, right? So here is a good way that maybe you can remember what some of these effects might be without having to memorize the list. All right, so the parasympathetic nervous system is sometimes what we call the rest and repose nervous system or rest and digest. So that's the part of your autonomic nervous system that's activated when you're resting or when you're lying down, sleeping, or even after a meal when you're eating. Because what does a parasympathetic nervous system do for digestion? It is excitatory, so it helps you digest things. And it does what for your heart? Decreases your heart rate. Can you exercise with a low heart rate?
No.
When is your heart rate low? When you're resting. Right, so the parasympathetic nervous system is what we call the rest and digest nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system, on the other hand, is what we call the fight or flight nervous system. It becomes activated when you're excited, when you're presented with a stressful situation, you know, especially a life-threatening situation. So when you're presented with a threatening situation, what happens to your heart rate? It increases. All right, what happens to your respiratory rate? It increases. And so your heart rate increases, your respiratory rate increases, because it's going to help deliver nutrients and oxygen to your skeletal muscles that you need to do what? Deal with that threat, like fight or fly away. We can't fly anymore, but you can run away, right? And that's important. The sympathetic nervous system supports that activity. All right, and what about your eyes? Like if something bad was going to happen, would your eyes, your pupils get really, really small so you can't see something? Or would they dilate so that you could really appreciate what's going on? They would dilate, right? So that's part of the sympathetic system that causes pupil dilation. Okay? All right, and then also, when you're faced with this life-threatening situation, do you need to be spending any energy and resources digesting a meal that you just ate, or do you need to have all that oxygen and nutrients going to your brain, your heart, and skeletal muscles to deal with this situation? Digestion is secondary, right? You just want to live through whatever happening in that immediate, right, event, and then you can go back and digest later. So that's why we call the sympathetic the fight or flight response. The parasympathetic, the rest and digest or rest and repose response. And every once in a while, I see commercials on TV that show these effects. And I'm sure movie producers, who's a famous movie producer? Spielberg, yeah, Lucas. I'm sure they have people that have taken anatomy and physiology on staff, and they say, well, let's make a movie that stimulates a part of their autonomic nervous system. And which one do you think they're telling them to stimulate? The parasympathetic or sympathetic nervous system? The sympathetic, that's right, because how much does it cost to go see a movie now? I don't know, $50? Well, it depends if you need to pay for parking and babysitter and all that kind. It might be $100. So if you're going to pay $50 or $100 to see a movie, are you going to go see a movie that puts you to sleep, okay, or increases your heart rate, increases your respiratory rate, dilates your pupils, causes your sweat glands to perspire, or one that's going to stimulate your digestive system and put you to sleep? Okay? Definitely what? The sympathetic nervous system. So I'm sure there are people that measure all these responses in people, and they figure out what kind of cinematic effects do what? Boost people's heart rate, blood pressure, okay, respiratory rate. Really easy things to measure, and then they make movies out of that kind of stuff. Okay, so can you get an appreciation for the difference between the parasympathetic and sympathetic now a little bit? I don't think you have to memorize all those things. They're just responses that you're already familiar with. Oh, the commercial I was thinking of, they had a commercial for BMW on TV, a BMW car, and it was racing down a mountain road, and then they would flash just for a second to somebody's pupil, and all of a sudden the iris went ooh, like that, and then they flashed back to the car. Okay, and then the car drove down the twisty road for a couple more seconds, and then they flashed just to a second to somebody's heartbeat. They had an angiogram of somebody's heart, and all of a sudden we go bloop, 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 bloop. And so what were they doing? They're just reinforcing, what, the sympathetic activity when they're showing this commercial, this automobile commercial. So it's interesting how people use advertisements to implant all kinds of ideas in our minds. Right? So I'm sure you guys are kind of familiar with this kind of stuff. Okay. All right, so let's look at the sympathetic nervous system. All right, so this one right here, the blue is which division? That's parasympathetic because it is what? Craniosacral. It's craniosacral. Now I need to find something that is what? Thoracolumbar. Thoracolumbar. Is that it? No, that's not it. Is that it? Sort of. Ah, here it is. This is a better picture of it because here we see outflow from the spinal cord. Do you see any coming from cranial nerves? None whatsoever. Remember, only parasympathetic leaves via cranial nerve. So from T1 to L2, signals leave the spinal cord, and then they enter the sympathetic chain ganglia. These act as like a little auxiliary spinal cord on either side of the main spinal cord for what kind of activity? Sympathetic activity, in particular, the sympathetic chain ganglia. Okay, so this is just one division of the sympathetic nervous system. And again, these are dotted lines because they are myelinated fibers. And so these are very short. Some synapse in the sympathetic chain, and then the postganglionic fiber goes all the way to the effector organ. And that's a dotted line because it's a non-myelinated fiber. All right, let's maybe review a kind of concept. The preganglionic fiber. Tell me the neurotransmitter that's released by the preganglionic fiber of the sympathetic. Acetylcholine. So the preganglionic fiber is a, what kind of neuron? It's a cholinergic neuron. What's the neurotransmitter that's released on the effector organ? Norepinephrine. So the postganglionic fiber is called a adrenergic fiber. Yeah, okay. You guys are learning a lot today. Okay. All right, so that's kind of the difference between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. We have to learn a little bit more. Let's see what we got here. Okay. How would you describe the difference between the pre- and postganglionic neurons of the sympathetic nervous system? All right, well, I think now that's relatively easy. We just sort of did that. One is myelinated, one is non-myelinated, one is adrenergic, and one is cholinergic, but I said it backwards. The preganglionic is what? Cholinergic, and the postganglionic is adrenergic. The preganglionic is relatively what in length?
Short,
and then the postganglionic is relatively long. That's the opposite compared to the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay, so notice that the ganglia are very far away from the effector organs. And the sympathetic nervous system has two locations where there can be ganglia. The first place is in the sympathetic chain, but there can be some other ganglia located in front of the vertebral column. So sometimes we call those prevertebral or collateral ganglia. So sometimes sympathetic nerves leave the spinal cord, enter the sympathetic chain, but don't synapse. They pass right through. And can you see that? Because what is the nature of this line right here? Is it dashed or is it solid?
Solid.
That's solid color. So that means that that is really still the preganglionic fiber. And where does it go? It goes to a collateral ganglia in front of the vertebral column, to a collateral ganglia where it synapses. And then here is the postganglionic neuron. And a nerve that connects the sympathetic chain to a prevertebral ganglia is always what we call a splanchnic nerve. All right, so you see a number of splanchnic nerves right here. I don't want you to be able to know all the differences and all the different splanchnic nerves. You should just be aware that a splanchnic nerve is connecting the sympathetic chain with a prevertebral ganglia someplace, and it's a preganglionic fiber. All right, so this is a nerve that just passes right through the sympathetic chain. So here's a splanchnic nerve, here's another splanchnic nerve, and here's another splanchnic nerve. So you'll run into splanchnic nerves, but a lot of times some students have never heard of them before. But a splanchnic nerve is part of the sympathetic nervous system. Okay, and what does that sympathetic nervous system do? It supports, maintains, and raises your heart rate, respiratory rate, your blood pressure, right? It wakes you up, dilates your eyes so that you can deal with your immediate circumstances. Okay. Why does it decrease digestion? Because the sympathetic nervous system is there to support activities that might be life-threatening for you. All right? So only parts of your body that are going to help deal with that life-threatening situation at that moment will be activated, and other systems in your body will be deactivated. So digestion is a longer-term kind of process, right? So it might take half hour or hours or something, and that's not necessary for you to deal with a circumstance right at the immediate moment. And the other reason is that you have blood vessels going all over your body, and you don't have enough blood in your body for it to go everywhere at one time. You only have enough blood to go to certain places. And your body controls where that blood goes depending on your activity level. So you probably heard this from your mom when you're growing up, and maybe you even tell your own kids this. Like right after lunch, do you let your kids go swimming or exercising? No, because after a meal, a lot of blood is going to your digestive tract, right, to help you digest food. And if you start exercising, your body is conflicted because when muscles start to exercise, what do they need? They need blood. So it takes blood away from your digestive tract, and there's a big conflict, and sometimes that produces muscle cramps, and which is no big deal if you're taking notes or lecturing or something, but what if you're swimming in a swimming pool and you get a really nasty cramp in your stomach or something? You might not be able to hold your head above water, you know, and that could be fatal. Okay, so it's because we don't have enough blood in our bodies to go everywhere at one time. Your body has to pick where it goes. And if it's going to muscle, then it's got to be taken away from other organs. Okay. Where are some other places where you can't ever take blood away from? Your brain, your heart, kidneys, those are all real important. Those don't ever really get adjusted very much. Yeah. Yeah, there is one. But it's in my office. I need a sign-in sheet, please. If anybody has a piece of paper, that would be great. No, we got it covered. Okay. Yeah, thanks. Sometimes there's just one too many things to remember everything. Thank you so much. Okay. All right, so don't forget, sympathetic is what? Thoracolumbar outflow. All right. I want to look at a couple other diagrams right here to fill in some things. All right, so here is a picture of what the sympathetic chain ganglia really look like. All right, so we can see some what? Intercostal muscles right here. So what part of the body are we looking at? Yeah, thorax, because intercostal muscles used for breathing, that's your thorax between the ribs. All right, so what kind of nerves, what kind of autonomic nerves leave in the thoracic region? Sympathetic or parasympathetic? Sympathetic, right, because it's thoracolumbar. So here you can see the sympathetic chain in the thoracic region. And here's a spinal nerve coming out from the intervertebral foramen. And this first little branch right here is going to go posterior like the erector spinae. Can anybody remember what that little branch is called? I don't know if it's labeled or not right there, but that would be going, what's going to the back? That's the dorsal, that's a dorsal mixed nerve that's going to the back, so we call that the dorsal ramus. Remember that from last time, dorsal ramus? And then right here is the ventral ramus going to everywhere in front of your body, in front of the spinal cord. But this is how signals, sympathetic signals, get into the sympathetic chain. Through these two little pathways right here. So these are what we call the rami communicantes. And I hope one looks white and one looks gray. And why would that be? Does one look white? Does one look white? No? Yeah? How about the one I have the cursor on? That's the one I want to be white. It's white. That's good. Because, again, for an autonomic pathway, how many nerves does it take to get to an effector organ? Nope. Two. There's a preganglionic and a postganglionic. Yeah, no, you'll get, we're just talking a lot of stuff today, but you'll pick it up pretty quick. The first one is what? Is myelinated, so it looks white. So this is how signals get into the sympathetic chain. So this is the white ramus communicantes, which is what? Signals entering the sympathetic chain. And they can synapse because here's a ganglion. There's nerve cell bodies in this ganglion. And after the synapse, they can re-enter the spinal nerve and go to an effector organ. So you can kind of make a loop like that. And so what can you tell me about the postganglionic fiber? It is non-myelinated. And since it's non-myelinated, what color should it look like? Gray. And so we call that the gray ramus communicantes. Okay? So it just makes that little loop. Now what else can sympathetic nerves do once they get into the sympathetic chain? They can pass right through and go to a prevertebral ganglia someplace. And how does a signal get from the sympathetic chain to another ganglia someplace? Via a splanchnic nerve. Yes, splanchnic nerve. right? So those are splanchnic nerves. Or they can even arise a couple levels or descend a couple levels and then leave the sympathetic chain and hop into the spinal nerve and go to an effector organ. So I want you to appreciate the sympathetic chain as being what? Like another spinal cord, but for what kind of activity? Fight or flight activity or sympathetic activity in particular. Okay. So I think you have, here's a better illustration. Yeah, this is a pretty good one. All right, so here you have, what can you tell me about this system right here? Is it somatic or is it autonomic? Is it parasympathetic or sympathetic or what? Does it look somatic to you or autonomic? How are you going to tell? Somatic has one neuron. Autonomic has got two. How many do you see?
One.
I see. Okay, so here's one that's leaving. And look, it ends right here. And it synapses in the sympathetic chain. Here is a postganglionic fiber. So that means this has got to be what? It's got two, so it's got to be an autonomic pathway. And, okay, that's not a cranial nerve. This is a spinal nerve. So I say this is a sympathetic outflow. Okay? And, of course, only sympathetic outflow goes through the sympathetic chain. So it can't be parasympathetic outflow. All right, so here we have the preganglionic fiber. And what can you tell me about the preganglionic fiber? It's myelinated, so this is the white ramus communicantes right here. Oh, so let's go from here. Here's a cell body in the lateral horn of the gray matter of the spinal cord. Leaves the ventral root, goes into the spinal nerve. Spinal nerve is mixed, right? And then it goes into the ventral ramus, and then into the white ramus communicantes, into the sympathetic chain. And like I said, these nerves can either ascend or descend, or pass right through. If it passes right through to a prevertebral ganglia, we'd call that a splanchnic nerve. All right, but in this particular case, it ascends, synapses on the postganglionic fiber. The postganglionic fiber leaves this gray ramus communicantes, which then enters, right, depending on where it's going, either the anterior ramus or the posterior ramus to get to the effector organ. All right, so this is a nice typical sympathetic outflow pathway. Let's see. I don't know if I have any of these as an exam figure. Maybe one of them I do. But I mean, you can kind of see this is sympathetic outflow, leaving the ventral root, spinal nerve, white ramus communicantes. Now, here's one that passes right through the sympathetic chain and goes to a prevertebral ganglia where it synapses. And then the postganglionic fiber, of course, is non-myelinated, going to the digestive tract. All right, so you know what? You should be able to draw this. And sometimes I ask lab instructors to make sure that they quiz students on how to draw this kind of thing. All right, so let's draw this this pathway. All right, so what do we got right here? What does that look like? All right, so make sure you can draw this. Just don't watch how this is done, but actually kind of draw this. All right, so what does that look like? Okay, that is spinal cord. Okay, spinal cord right here. And let's just say that this is anterior, and this is posterior. What's another name for posterior? Yeah, posterior is not quite ventral. It's actually dorsal. Okay, and anterior is ventral. All right, ventral. You should probably always stop and think about. Bless you. All right, so how do signals enter and leave the spinal cord? Through? How do things connect up to the spinal cord? What are these things that connect up to the spinal cord? We call them, not the little ones. The little ones we call rootlets. But the big ones we call roots. All right, so here's a root. This is the ventral root. Here's the dorsal root. What's on the dorsal root? The dorsal root ganglion. And the root comes out like this. And then what is this thing right here? That's the spinal nerve, right? So I'm just going to put SN right here for spinal nerve. I don't want to put too many lead lines on it because it will get really confusing. All right, what can you tell me about the traffic in the ventral root? Which way is it going? Is it afferent or efferent? It's efferent. It's leaving, right? Information is leaving. What about the dorsal root? It's afferent. Is it 100% afferent? Absolutely. Okay, so the roots are never mixed. They're always just one or the other. What about the traffic in the spinal nerve right here? It's mixed. Yeah, make sure you know that. Okay, so then what did we learn from last time? This nerve is going to go and innervate areas of your body posterior to the vertebral column. So what is this thing called? This is going to be the dorsal, and I could say R, but there's R's here, so let's put what? RA for what? Ramus. That's a dorsal ramus. And then what's going to the anterior part of your body? The ventral RA, ventral ramus. All right, so that's just a typical kind of outflow, but let's say now for sympathetic activity. How does sympathetic activity leave? A little bit more complicated, because what do you have on either side of the spinal cord? You've got the, oh, and I put it right here on that silver line. So let me put it here. Not quite in the right spot, but close enough. This is the sympathetic chain ganglion. So it's running up and down. The spinal cord is going up and down. These are what, running up and down? How does sympathetic activity enter the sympathetic chain? Let's just say, I'll put an arrow right there. How does it get in there? What color is it going to be? You know what? The preganglionic fiber is white, so this is the white ramus communicantes. Signal's going in. All right. And then after they synapse in the sympathetic chain, they can re-enter the spinal nerve. What is that? That's the gray ramus communicantes. All right, but sympathetic nerves can just pass right through the sympathetic chain to go to a collateral ganglion someplace. So I'll put CG right here. So there's a nerve that goes from sympathetic chain to CG. What do we call that kind of nerve? That's actually what we call a splanchnic. 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 Splanchnic nerve, all right? And then that can go to what? Some effector organ. Like, what kind of effector organs would that go to? Cardiac? Smooth? Or what? Glands. CG? Collateral ganglion. Okay, collateral ganglion. Because these collateral ganglia are in front of the vertebral column, sometimes they're called prevertebral. And because the sympathetic chain is on either side of the vertebral column, they're called paravertebral. So prevertebral versus paravertebral sometimes. Okay, now what you said was true. All right, in terms of lungs, all right, the sympathetic nerves go to lungs, for instance, but why do they go to lungs? To innervate smooth muscle that's going to dilate airways or constrict airways, right? So it's what? What do you have in lungs? You've got smooth muscle. You got smooth muscle in lungs to control airway diameter. Okay? So you should be able to draw this out really quickly. I don't know how long it would take. Yeah, very quickly. So, how long do you think, how long would you need? How long would you need to draw something like that? Like, you could do it in 60 seconds? Probably? Okay, I'll erase it. Let's just see. But, you know what? I might need help labeling some of these things. I'm going to go to one side of the board, I think. Okay. So who wants to keep track of the time? You will? All right. So you tell me when to start. All right, so here we got what? The spinal cord? All right, I'm getting a little sloppy. All right, so what leaves the spinal cord? That's the ventral root. How do signals get in? Dorsal root. Here is the dorsal root ganglia. And then these come together to form the spinal nerve. What can you tell me about the spinal nerve? It's mixed, right? This is sensory. Ventral root is motor. The spinal nerve is going to bifurcate to go to the anterior or posterior part. So this one going to the posterior part is called the dorsal ramus. This is going to the anterior part. This is what? The ventral ramus. Then sympathetic nerve for activity is going to leave the spinal nerve and go into where? Sympathetic chain ganglia. And it gets in via what kind of pathway? It's myelinated, so this is the white ramus communicantes. And then maybe it leaves and goes back into the spinal nerve, but now it's the postganglionic fiber that's non-myelinated, so this is what, the gray ramus communicantes? Or maybe the sympathetic nerve passes right through the sympathetic chain, going to a collateral ganglion, and it gets into a collateral ganglia via what? A splanchnic nerve. Yeah, how long did that take? Ooh, I think I'm getting old. Okay, so practice doing that so you can do it in like 60 seconds. All right? That will help out a lot. Where's the sign-in sheet? Is that still going around? You got it? Good. Yeah, keep passing it around. All right, so that's everything on this diagram, but you know I like my diagram even better. All right. Okay, got a couple more things to look at. Not very much. All right, so again, let's look at a comparison between a somatic and autonomic pathway. Here's a somatic pathway. It takes how many fibers, nerve fibers, to get to the effector organ? Just one. An autonomic pathway requires two, right? And don't forget, the preganglionic fiber is always what kind of fiber? It's myelinated for parasympathetic and sympathetic, but there's also another similarity. They're always cholinergic, no matter if it's sympathetic or parasympathetic. But for instance, if this postganglionic fiber was sympathetic, what kind of fiber would it be? If it's sympathetic, it would be an adrenergic fiber. But if it is parasympathetic, it would be a cholinergic fiber, right? Okay. All right, so for an autonomic pathway, with one exception, and this is really important, so I wouldn't leave early. Yeah, so definitely keep it down because this is really important. I don't want anybody to lose any points on the test for this one. Okay, it's usually what? The preganglionic and a postganglionic for autonomic pathway, with one exception. This is hugely important. All right, and that one exception is a couple slides ahead right here. I got to go find it. One exception is the pathway that goes to the adrenal medulla. And the adrenal medulla is in the adrenal gland. Sometimes we call this the suprarenal gland because the kidney, sometimes we call that the renal gland. Supra means on top of. So the adrenal gland is on top of the kidney. And every organ has a superficial part that we call, like what do we call the superficial part of bone? That's the cortex. Remember cortical bone? All right, that's compact bone. But there's also medullary bone, which is the deep part. That's a different kind of bone. That's what kind of bone is medullary bone? Spongy. Right, so you should be aware that different organs have different structure depending if it's superficial or deep. But the deep part of the adrenal gland, called the adrenal medulla, has special cells in it. These are what we call chromaffin cells, and they are part of the sympathetic system. All right, so here is the preganglionic fiber. You can see again the cell body and the lateral horn of the gray matter leaving the ventral root. Right? Getting into the spinal nerve, and it passes right through the sympathetic chain. How does it get into the sympathetic chain? Via the white ramus communicantes, right? And then it passes right through. It doesn't synapse. So what fiber is this? Is this the preganglionic or postganglionic? It's still the preganglionic fiber, right? It's a solid line, so it's myelinated. That's how come it's going through the white ramus communicantes. And it goes, it passes right through. What kind of nerve passes right through? It's a splanchnic nerve, and it goes directly to the adrenal medulla without synapsing. So the preganglionic fiber goes all the way to the adrenal medulla. So here is, right, the second or the postganglionic cell of this sympathetic pathway. Now, does that look like a neuron? I don't see any dendrites. I don't see any axons. This is a modified postganglionic cell that's really not acting like a neuron. It doesn't send electrical signals anywhere. But when it receives a signal from this preganglionic fiber, it automatically releases norepinephrine and epinephrine as a hormone. And that hormone then gets picked up by a capillary, and norepinephrine and epinephrine are carried where? Everywhere that your blood goes, which is where? Everywhere in your body. It carries that signal to your heart, carries it to your eyes, to your brain, to your kidneys, everywhere, and that increases sympathetic activity where in your body? Everywhere. And what kind of activity is sympathetic activity? Increasing heart rate, increasing respiration, increasing blood pressure, pupil dilation, decreasing digestion. Right, so even though nerves don't, some nerves go to all those places, but here is a very potent backup system that sends that broad signal everywhere in your body to back up the nervous innervation to those organs. So here the postganglionic cell is really an endocrine gland. So these you could actually think of as being part neurons and part endocrine gland. And what they secrete, epinephrine and norepinephrine, right? Usually we think of norepinephrine as a neurotransmitter, but in this case, since it's picked up by the circulatory system, it's acting more like a hormone. And so somebody could ask you, well, what is norepinephrine? Is it a neurotransmitter or a hormone? And you'll say, well, you know, the designation is not so simple. In this particular case, norepinephrine is really acting partly like a neurotransmitter because it's released by this modified neuron, but it's picked up by the circulatory system, so it's really a neurohormone. So it's got components of acting like a neurotransmitter and components of acting like a hormone. So this is the only system in the body where you don't have two neurons, two actual neurons in an autonomic pathway. You just have the preganglionic fiber, and the postganglionic cell is acting like an endocrine gland. So a lot of times when we study anatomy and physiology in some classes, we don't study the nervous system like we did in this class and then the endocrine system. We study them together because here we see that there is what? There is a direct relationship in structure and function between the nervous system and endocrine system. They're integrated into really one system, so we study the neuroendocrine system. But that's probably a little bit later on for you guys. All right, so do you see just this one fiber, and then here is the postganglionic fiber that's been modified, severely modified, to exist right within the adrenal medulla. All right, so you know what? I think that's it for today. I might have to finish up some other things next time, but over break, man, start reading some of these chapters. And maybe, you know what, during break, what's the next chapter? Read the next chapter. Because if you didn't read the autonomic nervous system before today, I bet it seemed like a lot of material. But if you read it a little bit ahead of time, that'd be really helpful. Okay.